everybody. I think if I was doing new business cards, I was thinking about who am I would be, the better descriptor would be surfer, theologian, bon vivant. That's probably a better descriptor for me than pastor by a long stretch.
We'll put pastor in.
Renaissance man.
Something. Who knows? Thank you for coming. So we're going to take a look at this whole idea of pilgrimage today. Lily did a great job of centering us. So I'm so grateful for that. Because the thing that I talk about at the very beginning, before we do anything, is we have to breathe together. So to respiration, you hear the word for the spirit in there, respiration. And so if you breathe together, you are respiring together, so you are doing a conspiracy. So to conspire together means we breathe together. So I just want to take a minute, and as you breathe in, you can put your feet flat on the ground, and then just sit kind of straight, and as you breathe in, say to yourself, I am here. And as you breathe out, say to yourself, I am loved. And let's just do that for a minute together. I am here. I am loved. Thank you. I'm going to read this to you. You can read with me. This is a piece by Pablo Neruda, the Chilean poet. He says, you start dying slowly if you do not travel, if you do not read, if you do not listen to the sounds of life, if you do not appreciate yourself. You start dying slowly when you kill your self-esteem, when you do not let others help you. You start dying slowly if you become a slave to your habits, walking every day on the same paths, if you do not change your routine, if you do not wear different colors or you do not speak to those who you don't know. You start dying slowly if you avoid feeling passion and its turbulent emotions, those that make your eyes glisten and your heart beat fast. You start dying slowly if you do not change your life, when you are not satisfied with your job or with your love, or with your surroundings. If you do not risk what is safe for the uncertain, if you do not go after a dream, if you do not allow yourself, at least once in your lifetime, to run away from sensible advice. The Talmud tells us that to not risk anything is the greater risk. Right? So to think about our lives in terms of pilgrimage, and what is driving us from that standpoint? So who's this guy? Who am I? Why should you be here with me? Let me just, so I'm not an expert in this stuff, but I have been leading pilgrimages I've led 9 of them to Italy and to Ireland and Scotland and to Nicaragua and Haiti. And just this last couple days, or last month I should say, we went to the Songs of Hope one. I took a group of 21 people to East Germany, to Czech Republic, and then a few of us went on to Vienna. And the whole focus was, how can you find examples of where art and music were born in times of oppression and were used to help sustain people? I feel like that's kind of a necessary task for us right now in our lives, to figure out. In fact, I would say, just parenthetically, and was sort of my hope for the whole pilgrimage, was people would discover that what we are lacking right now, I think, in our own cultural challenge is more art and more music. We're not going to talk our way out of this. We're going to sing our way out of this. We're going to paint and sculpt and write our way out of this. And it takes a different mindset, right? We want to go power to power, but I think that there's a subversion that we can see from people who've done this for a long time. So that was this one. we were just doing that, and that was a wonderful time. So let's look at this historically. So people from all over in the Jewish world come to the Western Wall. There are, I don't know if you know this, but there are all sorts of funds available to get every Jewish-born child to Israel with the idea of pilgrimage. Of course, there's a political side to that, but there's also a deeply spiritual side, a desire to connect people with their roots. The same is true in Islam. One of the five pillars of faith in Islam is that you would at one point make a pilgrimage to Mecca. It's called the Hajj. And so one point in time in your life, for anyone who can afford to do it, they're supposed to make a pilgrimage to Mecca. When you go there, you do a whole bunch of things. What you see at the top, that is the Kaaba. And so people will all get there and they'll be rotating around this space. There's times of prayer, that's right in Mecca. Then outside, there's these different mountains and you go back and forth, and it chronicles the journey of Abraham when he was visiting and bringing all the bringing water and food to Hagar, who was with Ishmael, not in our scriptures, but in the Quran. And so people would then go back and forth, and you see this. And everyone dresses in all these white as they go back and forth, but they're from all over the world. And I've talked to several Muslims that have said, who have made their pilgrimage, and they talk about it as being a transformative experience for them. We can think even in our own cultural history of how Malcolm X, who was a member of the Nation of Islam, then he went and made his pilgrimage, and he saw what he thought was then true Islam, and he changed his name, and he became he left the Nation of Islam at that point because he thought that it was restrictive, and he thought that the true Islam was open to people of all different races and backgrounds. So many people do this. We have some friends. My girlfriend Celia is right there. Wave your hand, Celia. I told Celia I was taking her on an all-inclusive mountain resort trip, and so this is where she is. I may have bent it a little, but it is in fact an all-inclusive mountain resort. The resort part's a little stretched. But a friend of ours just did this. I've got some other friends who just walked this. I'm going to be walking it next May. It's become a very interesting thing. Has anyone walked this? You've walked it?
I did a portion of it.
You did a portion of it? You walked how much? All of it?
Well, it depends on which route.
Yeah, which did you do? Which one did you do?
I did the Primitivo and the Norte.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, what exactly, you're right. There's there's at least 9 right ways to go. Most people do the French way. And that's the one that I'm looking at doing, and I'm thinking we'll talk more. But here's the thing: people do this one. It started obviously as a Santiago de Compostela is where the remains of Saint James are, and the whole idea is you get to this place. It's been happening for like 1,500 years. The people have at least been making these pilgrimages, but a lot of non-Christians are doing this now, and it's fascinating to have the conversations on the way. People tell me, you guys I'm sure could share stories, about how it's the search, not necessarily your faith tradition, that seems to be mattering, which is just so curious to me. Here's people who make the pilgrimage to the Basilica of Guadalupe in Mexico City. They walk, some of them, 100 miles on their knees as a way of making this last part of the pilgrimage. There in Mexico City. And then here you can see, this is the Kropatrick. It is that kind of shale rock hill with zero trail going up it. And you do this as a pilgrimage in Ireland. And it's something that people come from around the world to go do this. You see here the Ganges River in India. It's a place for Hindu people to go, but it's way beyond that. You have people who are from all over the world who are spiritual seekers who come and they want to be in these holy spaces. So I wonder, what is the motivation, right? What is it that is inside us that drives us towards leaving comfort and leading into, to go to these holy places, right? This is down in California. This is Manzanar. And this is where there was one of the Japanese detention centers or internment camps. And so people go there every year to bear witness to that reality. people who are descendants of those who were detained there, and also others who are there as supporters and allies. So what calls us on this journey? And one of the things I thought about is, and why I wanted to do this here, is because my operating assumption is that some of us in this room are on a pilgrimage right now. That you come here, to this holy space, looking for something. So this is a bit of the audience participation part. If you would just turn to someone next to you or get a couple twos or threes together, and I want you to take 2 minutes each and ask that question. Just who are you and why are you here this week? Ready, set, go. One more minute. One other way to really do this this seminar, this first one, justice, is just to say, now take the rest of the time, you have 45 minutes, answer these two questions really. Who are you? Don't tell me just your name. Who are you? Why are you here this week? Do you know? Is it possible that there are bigger forces afoot? Absolutely. And what might they be? I think that at some level, a lot of our spiritual searchings are trying to answer these questions. Right? Who are you? Why am I here? Real quickly, let's just do a quick brainstorming on this whiteboard. Think of sacred journeys in any scriptures, not just the Bible. Anytime, like you think about a sacred journey, just shout it out, I'm going to write it up.
Exodus.
Paul.
Huh?
Paul's journey.
Paul's missionary journeys?
Yeah,
he has the first one, though, doesn't he? He has a pilgrimage on the road to Damascus, too. Yeah. But it's just Paul. Let's put Paul, all of his. Others?
Seeking purpose.
Seeking purpose. How about, like, specific stories can we think of that are...
The Odyssey.
The Odyssey, exactly.
Siddhartha.
Canterbury Tales. Let's put CT.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, right? Lord of the R's. Yeah. How about even...
Astoria.
What's that?
Contemporary is Astoria, how they came to the West.
Astoria. Mm-hmm. How about... have you ever thought about literally every time we find Mary and Joseph and Jesus? They're making pilgrimages to Bethlehem or to Jerusalem. There's constantly the sense of people are always, how about Abraham and Sarah? Get up and go. Where? I don't know. Take off. You're 75. Go. Yeah.
What's how about the migration of the black people forward, north?
Oh, you mean more migration post emancipation?
Yes.
Or even pre, like the Underground Railroad. Yeah. So African American history. I would say in many ways you've got a whole chapter that's like non-voluntary pilgrimaging that's going on there, or the new journeys that are taking place, and that's true for a lot of people even today. The economic force pilgrimage, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
The vision quests of Native Americans.
Vision quests, excellent.
Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah.
Lewis and Clark.
Lewis and Clark.
Huckleberry Finn.
I think I missed the Grapes of Wrath. The Grapes of Wrath.
How about going to the moon?
Moonshot. It's specific on our mind right now.
How about life journeys?
Life journeys. Say more. Who said that?
Oh,
yeah, what did you say?
Life journey.
Yeah, like
personal journey.
Exactly, like the whole lifespan. The point is, once we start to look at the stuff, we realize that they're everywhere. Once you start to pay attention to, if you look at the lens of all of the things you're looking through, almost all the great, like, whether they're comedies or other, like, buddy movies, they're always a journey. You always got to get someplace. And that process of it, because it's a great story vehicle, right? I'll ask our storyteller expert up here. It's a great story vehicle for us when you're thinking about a journey, because it mimics what it is that it is to live, as you were saying, life journeys. So I want to take a look at this story real quick, right? This is a story that I think says a lot about why we would go on a pilgrimage. This is the story of Jesus healing a man at Bethesda. So I'm going to put this up here. Would someone read the first paragraph? Would someone read, and then this goes, let's get a first volunteer. You're the first paragraph. Who's the second volunteer? You're that, you read this one. Then who's going to do the third one? Back there in the back, this one. And then you got this last line. Go.
Some days later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which is Aramaic, is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in the condition for a long time, he asked him,
"Do you want to be well?"
"Sir," the man replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked.
Now that day was a Sabbath.
Exactly. Amen. So what do you notice about this story, maybe that you haven't seen before, in context of talking about pilgrimages and journeys? Anything striking you?
Do you want to be well?
Do you want to be well? Absolutely, yeah.
Pick up your mat and walk. I knew that part, but I thought he was walking into the pool before. No, he's walking
away.
Uh-huh,
exactly.
Just go.
What's this man's story? What is his life story? What is it? What is he living according to?
He's a victim, kind of. Yeah. Everybody goes ahead of him.
38 years, and there's this, and whenever the pool stirs, first one in gets the healing. I never get there. Someone gets in before me. Right. By the way, let's stop. Does Jesus say, "Yeah, that's true about this pool"?
No.
No. Let's stop and ask the question: would it make any sense for the God of love to have a foot race of the lame to figure out who gets healed? Does that sound like a God that you'd want to worship? Or does that sound kind of cruel? Where this is a God that only heals the winners of a race? And you got to sit around and be ready? And then, so it's really also a God that only helps the easiest to help. Right? Jesus will have none of the story. He doesn't comment on it. He doesn't say, "Watch, I'll stir the water and get you in." He doesn't pick up on it. Instead, he just asks them the question. He asks them the question, do you want to be well? And he rehearses his life story. Here's my life story. I'm here forever. This is what I do. And then Jesus says, just get up and pick up your mat and walk. Go. Yeah.
So the man was stuck, and this is a story about starting the journey.
Yes! Yes! A for the day. Ding, ding, ding. Yes!
What did you say?
He was stuck.
Oh, yeah.
He's stuck. He's stuck in a story that isn't true. Mm-hmm. Sound familiar?
Was it his faith?
That's prying. Huh?
Was it his faith? I mean...
I would say whatever story you are believing is your faith. Right? If you look at it that from that way. So his faith is that there is this God that once in a while an angel will stir water, and if you're quick enough to get in, then that God might heal you. By the way, I've got this hanky that I'll sell you for $1,000 if you just mail in that $1,000 that I have prayed over and will heal your cancer. Does that sound like the God we know of Jesus Christ? Jesus instead says, change your story. Get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Does Jesus heal him? I would say yes, but of what?
His stuckness.
Maybe he really did suddenly have a total physical healing. I'm not going to rule that out. That I think is definitely part of the Jesus story throughout. But notice Jesus doesn't touch him. Jesus doesn't. There's no, in this case, you know, spit in the mud and all that stuff. There's no process. There's just, get up, pick up your mat and walk. And he does. And then it says that day was a Sabbath. That is the day in which God's intention was made real. Right? That's the whole purpose of creation, is the Sabbath. So the whole purpose of your life is to be able to get unstuck from your story and into something else. Yeah.
But I think the key there is, do you want to be well?
Exactly. Does the man answer the question? Do you want to be well?
You want to be.
By his actions, he does.
Well, at the end, he does, by his actions. But when he first asked the question, there's no... So there that even rules out the idea like Jesus is waiting for the right answer. Mm-mm. Right? Jesus is like, do you want to be made well? And he just rehearses his life story and he says, just get up. Just get up. Leave this thing that you're doing and move on. This is our life. Right? What are the stories that we carry about our families, about ourselves, about our country, about God? What are the stories that are anchors that hold you down? Right? And by the way, just so we're super clear, I have them, you have them, we all have them. That's, and part of our spiritual process is, I think, becoming aware of them and then deciding to walk away from them, right? To say, I don't have to live that way anymore. So the path of inquiry, and this is, you know, to give a plug for Kai's thing that we're going to be doing at 5. He's up there. I keep pointing up there. Kai's up there. Kai is teaching a course on creative writing and about the sort of the inner journey, correct? Yeah. And so just to carry this into this, like, who am I? What stories do I live? Which are true or not true for me? What is the purpose of my life or purposes of my life? I think that we begin to carry stories about ourselves, and sometimes they show up in the question when someone says, oh, hi, who are you? And we always want to then, in our culture, we usually go with name and then occupation. Maybe family connection, I'm so-and-so's dad, or whatever. But is that's a snapshot. But the larger question of who we are remains unclear. This is Saint Augustine. He said, that's in Latin, but it is solved by walking, right? It is solved by walking. And so that's why I think that there's something in the very process of being pushed to leave everything that's comfortable and then head out, not knowing what's going to happen. Because here's the thing, and we're going to talk about this more in a subsequent one of these sessions, but if it's too planned, it's not really a pilgrimage. Right? There has to be a certain element of you're going to figure it out as you go. Mm-hmm. I talked to this one woman who did the Camino, the French route, and on her way on the bus to the beginning of it, she ran into another woman who had just had this big life fall apart thing happen. And she was just going to Europe trying to figure out what's next. And they got the conversation, and she said, I'm going to be doing this thing. And that woman changed her ticket and went with her to the beginning, bought new shoes and a backpack, and then walked the 500-mile French route, right? I think that's kind of about right. I think that you can definitely overplan these things. And in fact, if you think about the scriptural examples of pilgrimages that God calls people to, there's no roadmap. Moses in the wilderness for 40 years is a good example of that, right? How are you going to get there? God says to Abram and Sarai in their late years, I want you now to get up, leave everything that you know, right? Drop and then head out to a land that I will show you. There's something beautifully, healing about an open-ended journey. And sometimes in our lives we're called to take them in these very intentional ways. Let me see what I can hear next here. I want to play you a song by David Wilcox, then we're going to have an open conversation a little bit about it. So now we'll see if technology will be my friend. All right. Kaboom. Anyone know David Wilcox? No, just me. Awesome. Well, this may be the best thing you'll get out of this whole thing. All right, here you go. It's called The Farthest Shore.
We were there in the woods by the water. We left our packs up against that willow tree. We dove right in, keeping just what we were born with, and our memories, knowledge, and our dreams. And as I swam away from our positions, I imagined that they were gone forevermore. And for once, I was glad that all I treasured would still be with me as I reach the other shore. So let me dive into the water, leave behind all that I've worked for, except what I remember and believe. And when I stand on the farthest shore, I will have all I need. After the blaze burned our cabin down to ashes, where we had slept warm, now the sky lets in the rain. Found the strings, frets, and rusted latches, but I will never hear that old guitar again. These four walls are only in my memory, where these stone steps rise to nothing in the air. So one last look, and I'm headed for the river to wash my hands and try to say this prayer. Let me dive into the water, leave behind all that I've worked for, except what I remember and believe. And when I stand on the farthest shore, I will have all I need. When my time to live this life is over, I tip my hat when I think about that still. And of all things make a life worth living, only let me dive into the water, leave behind all that I've worked for, except what I remember and believe. dive into the water.
Any pieces of that speak to you? You care to share for anybody?
I thought as it was going through, I could probably leave everything but the guitar, and then it came down in the cabin, and I was...
You, that was a rough moment for you. Yeah, that's a little personal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard for me sometimes to... Keep thinking about moving forward and leaving the past behind.
Uh-huh.
My job, my house, you know,
yeah.
Just, you know, there's, you'll be okay.
Yeah. You know we're all going to do that anyway, right?
Right? Yeah.
It's all stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's just getting away from all the stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the things that you think are so
important to us. Yeah, and this one named Tim's, but we could just change the thing, and it could be all of us, right? Mm-hmm. Right, whatever it is that's our thing, mm-hmm. Right?
That home, or...
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I confess I was a high school English teacher before I say my next words.
Go ahead.
I love stories, and I love whenever water is involved in the story, I'm always very attuned to that,
uh-huh.
Because water symbolizes the in-between place,
ah.
The unformed place, when you have left this and you have not become that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we all have to be.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That was profound.
There's when I was listening to the music, I was thinking about the movie Gattaca. If you're familiar with that,
I think I saw it.
It's about a guy who's not genetically modified, and strips everybody who is. And his brother asks him, "How did you do it?" And he said, "I saved nothing for the return."
Mm-hmm.
Now that's the other part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You go for it, whether you know that you're going to get there or not.
Right. Right. Thank you. Yes.
I've been, I don't know how to call it, like on a health journey for 4 years,
uh-huh.
Having a lot of health problems and just coming out of that. And when I started that, I just felt free. Just like,
right.
I can do whatever I want. I can count on my body to do whatever I want.
Right.
But I can't anymore.
Right.
So there's a piece of this that's like, nope. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's actually a lot I need to do to stay healthy.
To be sure. And we're going to be talking in the third session about what sort of pilgrimage can you take when there's some limitations to you, to things that are you just really have to deal with, right? So, but that, thank you for that, because that's important. Okay. There are the limitations that are, in fact, like physical limitations, or, you know, there's some, you're at a place in your life where you have children, it wouldn't be right to necessarily just walk away from those. Sometimes you want to, but it's not legal. But there are other times in which I think the things that keep us from making that next journey into the in-between place is our stories we're telling ourselves about our lives. Right? I need all this. And it could be the possessions, but it could also be my title. Right? My the things that are so let me ask that question. What do you think is preventing? Well, let me back it up. How many of you have considered going on some big journey, some epic? How many of you have done it? A good handful of people have actually done it. Those of you who've done it, would you do it again? Or is once good? You do it again. So yeah.
Well, I did go on a 1,000-mile journey, but I live on an island, and my goal was always to walk the island.
Uh-huh.
And I consider that a journey.
Of course it is, yeah.
It took several days, several segments of the journey to do it. So, mm-hmm. And I was like 70 years old.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So,
yeah.
So
Neat. Yeah, by the way, the story I told about the woman on the bus, the woman who I talked to, I don't know what the age of the other woman was, but the woman I talked to was 73 when she did the Camino.
And, yeah. There's still time for
me. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because and it doesn't necessarily matter where or how long, per se, although there's a part of it, and we'll talk about that in the second one, about there's a little bit of it that does, should be, it shouldn't be something you can just bang out in an afternoon, right?
The walk, are you saying my walk?
No, any pilgrimage at some level, there needs to be a little challenge to the thing for it to actually do its work, I think.
It has to cost you.
Yes.
When I think of water, I think I, like you, was raised in Southern California, but I moved to the Midwest and I kept hearing about this great waters in the north, all the canoe country. And I was drawn to that. I wanted to see what this great wonder of nature is. And I got there, and before I knew it, I was guiding a trip of 10 young boys and hardly knew how to use a map, and I'd never been on a canoe trip before. I was going through 40 different lakes, and it took us 10 days.
Wow.
And we got back safely. And we learned when you live that close to the water, the water means everything. Water transports you, it cleans you, you cook with it, you are swimming in it, and you are looking at the beauty of the water
sure.
at those times of day when it's just absolutely stunning.
Which changes your relationship to water, and that also changes your relationship to environmental issues regarding water. I mean, all those things become deeply connected. We run a surf camp where at the church that I'm at right now. And the whole goal is not, I mean, you use the vehicle of surfing, which I'm a lifelong diehard, love surfing, but the reason we do the camp is because we want people to fall in love with the ocean. That's the goal. We want kids to care about the ocean enough that they're going to do something about it. Yeah, but I also love about your story is there's an element about, well, what were they thinking, having you do this, right? And that actually kind of... That describes all great adventures, right? At some level. If you're not over your head, you're probably not pushing it. Yeah. Other thoughts about that? My other question I was going to ask you then, and this is a bit of a personal question, but you can answer it as you can answer it, first of all, let me say, you can answer it personally, like saying, this is what it is for me, or you could answer it more generally, like, this is what it is for people, right? What stories are you believing that are not true as we sit here today? Anything come into mind?
No, really.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is we're blind and deaf to those.
Yeah.
We don't recognize them.
I think you're exactly right, but I also think we get hints. We get hints at times. So we're like, what stories am I having to spend a lot of time buttressing? Mm-hmm. Right? But they seem to be cracking. Yeah, go ahead.
For me personally, it's I'm not good enough. I'm not a good enough mother, a good enough wife, a good enough accountant, good enough. So I'm constantly trying to measure what have I done today? Or what am I doing for my kids? All the things that I'm supposed to be.
Right.
How am I measuring up?
Right.
Not to anybody else, but to what I think I should be.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you for being so honest about that, because that's a hard one, and I think a lot of us struggle with that at times. And I think that there, especially if you've been raised in a Protestant tradition, there's a lot of reinforcement of that fear that you should be doing more. You should be, I mean, my observation is that in some ways we've exchanged lifestyle things you should be doing 20, 30 years ago, like how you should be a good, honest, reputable person and all these things about what a good Christian was, to we've changed it to here's all the things in the world you need to solve. there are things in the world we need to solve. And I'm not saying that's not the case, but if we think that we're going to measure our worth that way, that's just another hard game. And so consequently, when we apply it to our lives, that can be a very common one. Am I good enough? Or do I feel like I'm not, I might be believing a story that I'm not measuring up. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I've noticed a lot of the 30-something, you know, I was reading Ann Landers or whatever, you know, like dear whoever, Carol, or, you know, I'm 30 and I'm living, I'm married and I'm living at home again in the basement at my parents' house and they just can't deal with it. And, you know, I mean, it's hard for the kids to, you know, it's hard for the kids, I mean, they have to, and everybody, we've all been, you know, right along, like, we're supposed to be married here and then have kids and then do this and then have a good job and then have, you know, everything's supposed to be in line. And it doesn't always happen like that.
No, no, you're right. It doesn't. And I think that there's a lot of rethinking of that, I think, with...
Right.
I think generationally speaking, a lot of people are rethinking a lot of those very things.
Yeah.
Right? So is this the pattern? Is this how this goes? Because the bar has been set quite high in terms of the dollar amount of that, too. And also sort of the to what point? I do this, that, the other. I've achieved according to what I've been told I should achieve.
Right.
Right. But it's what I call destination sickness. Right. What if when you get to the place you were supposed to get to, you find out I don't want any of it? That's called a midlife crisis, by the way. And and they don't just happen at midlife; they happen oftentimes. And
so
when you realize,
you didn't go this way, and maybe you're supposed to go that way.
Yeah. As Thomas Merton said, what do you do when you've discovered that you're the ladder of success you've been climbing has been leaning up against the wrong wall. Right? And it's like, well, you gotta. Most of what we do, to be honest, spiritually speaking, is we convince ourselves and everyone else why this is the right wall. But it's not the right wall. And you can only do that for so long before eventually you have to say, I gotta climb down and I gotta go start over and find the right wall. And that's spiritual healing, and usually that process is a great thing for a pilgrimage, right? Yeah.
I used to identify myself by my successful wall. And I, with my now deceased husband, we were in China with a group of other folks, all accomplished people. And it was a time to introduce one another. And everybody was saying they were this and they were that role. And it came to my turn and I said, I'm Marty. I used to live a life of doing, and now I live a life of being. Mm-hmm. Because I decided, who the heck cares what my resume is? We're here to travel China.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Anyone else? Things that are barriers, you think. What's keeping you from making the big leap?
Fear.
Fear?
It's always fear.
Yeah, it's always fear. What we're afraid of, what might happen.
We're afraid that we're not going to be adequate, or we're afraid that we will be adequate.
Right.
That's
even
scarier.
Right.
Yeah.
It's unknown.
Yeah. And then what, right? What if I come back and I find out that I've found my purpose in life and it's totally a different direction? Right? That's likely. Those things happen when we do these sorts of trips. But I do think that the courage to just dive right in is, at some level, is what it takes. When you do read these great, like the Odyssey, or if you read some of these texts about big journeys, the Exodus, there's not a lot of, okay, we're going to plan this all out. Here, this is how this is going to go. Instead, what is Passover on the Exodus story? It's a, you eat unleavened bread. Why? Because we don't have time for it to rise. Right? I mean, it wasn't because unleavened bread is holier at the time. It was because this is how we're going to be done, right? This is how we're going to be out the door because we have this narrow window. In fact, the soldiers are coming right now because Pharaoh's changed his mind. This is it. This is the beginning of us as a people. But you have, just grab what you can and get out the door. Sometimes I think that that is the energy around our spirituality, that we think that we're going to be able... Why do I do pilgrimages with the congregations that I serve? Number one, because I see more spiritual change happen in a pilgrimage than I do in a month of Sundays. Where you can kind of plug and play with everything else being the same in your life, and then you hear this teaching from Jesus, or something else comes along and begins to begins to move you a little bit, but then you instantly can step right back into, you know, well, you know, it's the last season finale of Game of Thrones, and, you know, I'm doing something else, or whatever it is that's your thing, and now whatever that was, I got pulled back in. Whereas when you get yourself in a condition that you can't change for a while, then you, God can really, I think, begin to work on us. And the divine wind can sort of blow into our lives in a different way. That's all I'm saying. So, and I've seen that happen with people. So oftentimes, and I have done them at different levels. Like when we do the steps of St. Francis, great pilgrimage, but you're in Rome and Assisi, and it's wonderful. It's a great personage to study, but the ease level is pretty easy. You know, you're going to stay in a nice hotel. We're going to have great Italian food. You know, there's no big threat here, even though change can still happen. Versus, you know, when I took a group to Haiti, that's a very different experience. But you get different people for where they are in their life, about what challenge level that they need. But I find that it's a very valuable thing. As you said, like when you travel China, I just want to see China, right? I mean, yeah. Last thoughts, questions? I heard a bell go. I don't know what that bell was for. I think I have like 10 minutes, but I...
Yeah.
Okay, we're good?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. So who has taken, besides, we had the pilgrimage people from the Camino, a couple of Camino walkers. Who has done a pilgrimage to the Holy Land? A couple of you? And I don't mean Minnesota. Right? Okay, yeah, right. So I did it in 2000. And this was actually, in some ways, what got me into the whole thing way back then. Because I'll be honest with you, a buddy of mine was leading it and asked me to go because he needed one more van driver. So he said, I'll pay your half your way if you'll just come, because I lived overseas for a couple years before that. He says, you know how to drive in an international situation. If you would just be a van driver, great, I'll pay half your way. So I went, and I wasn't thinking about this is going to be a great life-changing trip. I had no desire prior to that to go to the Holy Land. Here I was, a pastor, but I didn't think, I kind of thought it was going to be a little touristy and prepackaged. And what I found was it was life-changing for me. Getting there and having jet lag a couple hundred yards was where I was staying from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre meant that I would be there at 5:30 when they opened the doors, and I'd be able to go in there and meditate at the place for Golgotha and these other places. And to me, there was an energy and a power to it that shifted me. It also changed my view of the politics of that space. I hadn't thought too much about it. I knew that there were all these tensions existed. But while I was there, Ariel Sharon walked up to the Temple Mount. We were watching it from the top of the Lutheran hostel. And then we went and saw all the stones being thrown over the Western Wall. And from then on, everything was different. We couldn't travel the same way. And I got into a cab a couple days later, and there was a Palestinian cab driver. And I said, wow, this has been crazy. I'm sure this is hard for you folks who are living here. And he says, yes. He says, it sure is. And then one of my friends said, well, what do you think's the solution? And he said, well, we have to kill all the Jews. I said, what do you mean? He said, no, literally, we have to kill all the Jews. And at that time, we had just had a great conversation with a Palestinian group 2 days before in Bethlehem. And they were looking to find this two-state solution and reconciliation. And what I realized was there's just all sorts of diverse opinion, and it's important to get a snapshot of it. Those words are indelibly in my psyche as a result. It's only when we get out there and actually experience it that we have that happen. Other pilgrimages, places you've gone. How many people have gone to like Ireland, Scotland, or done like some of the Celtic spirituality stuff? Other places. How about to,
One that is indelible in my mind is when my wife and I went to Turkey. We spent 2 weeks in Turkey. And we went to Cappadocia, we went to the part of the Turkey where the early church was.
Right.
And we went to the church where St. Gregory the Great his chants and affected church music for all of history. And now it was a mosque. And we spent the day with the imam.
Yeah.
And the imam taught us things that we didn't know at all. And
right.
I saw my prejudice against Muslim. It was a deeply moving spiritual kind of experience, what I was experiencing with him. I could talk more about how it even became personal, with a personal relationship with him, but other people that are big on pilgrimages tell me that Turkey is one of their favorites. Right.
Thank you for that. That is actually where we're planning the next one.
Yeah.
And if later on, in fact, we're going to open it up if people want to get on a mailing list about this. It's the one of the ones we're going to do. But the whole point, back to what you were saying, is like we don't really know the stories that we're believing that aren't true until we run into them, and your story is exactly that. We carry with us, this is what I think a Muslim community would be like until we actually spend time in a Muslim community. That helps us unpack. And that's another great power of travel.
So I've done this 3 times. I'm getting ready to the 4th one. Where I've done a magical mystery tour, and this is anything you can do if you have a friend or you can be this friend. But I have a friend who likes to plan, and I don't. And so I have no idea what country I'm going to. For instance, one time I picked up a packet in London. This packet, and I was heading to Paris at the time, said, okay, on June 24th at 2:15, go to Charles de Gaulle Airport and open the first envelope. At that moment, I opened up a ticket to Krakow. I got on the plane right then. The next envelope, I just had information about Poland. The next envelope had some money and an address, Polish money and address. So obviously when I landed, I used the money to go to that address. And then just like every day, she had something planned where I was in another city, and I never knew what. Surprise. Other than going to Auschwitz, she asked me the day before, would you like to go to Auschwitz? You don't like, surprise, you're in Auschwitz.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, sometimes I get on a train, I wake up in Marrakesh. I have no idea where I'm going.
Wow.
And it's so fun.
This is a fantastic friend.
And that's right. What people always tell me. She likes to plan, and
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool to that's never nice. Know. Like sometimes it's like, sometimes she just sends me coordinates and I drive there.
Right.
Like one time it was like, you have to arrive between 12:28 and 3:12. It's like nothing is open those hours. So but I follow along and I get there and it's like an island you can only access at low tide. But whatever, right. So it's like really fun to like never know, just embrace the mystery.
Right.
And if you don't want to do it, it's like a big way. And she knows I like to travel cheap and cheerful, so I have a big budget. But sometimes I just pick a day, or I go to the farmer's market, I pick somebody and say, what is your favorite place to go around here? And I go to that place, and I do something, and then I find somebody there, and I say, where do you really like to go that's around here? So then I go
nice.
To that place,
nice.
And that costs nothing.
Right.
But it's just kind of like embracing the mystery of it.
Absolutely.
I love to do that.
That's a great story.
Sleep on a boat. And not know where you're going to wake up because you're floating.
Right.
Just that, I love that mystery.
So if you are in this room and you are a planner, take note of what your friend does, and then you got to find a friend like you that you're going to send on these wild trips because it's deeply appreciated.
So
that's fantastic. That's very cool. That's fantastic.
Very cool.
So here's what's going to happen in the next session. So there's. Maybe those of you who have done the Camino know there's something called the Pilgrim's Creed, right? And so we're going to, it has 5 elements of it. That's going to be the next section. And really what it gets at is what's the difference between a traveler and a tourist, mm-hmm. right? So what does it mean to be a pilgrim? How do you prepare yourself and also check some things along the way to make sure that you are open to the experience right in front of you as opposed to being a tourist and trying to... shoehorn your own culture into it. So we're going to take a look at that at some length and have an opportunity to sort of dig into the difference. And then the last thing is going to be sort of off the beaten path, road less taken type pilgrimages. Things that you can do when you have different limitations, be they physical or economic or time-wise, things that you can begin to do to think about taking a pilgrimage. And the whole time, I'm hoping that we as a community both can learn to express it, write about it, go to Kai's thing at his session at 5:45, but also to think about this today, 5:45, but also to think about this experience you're having here at Holden Village in the light of a pilgrimage, to say, I know we all go look at the board and we all start to plan all the things we're going to do, and we all think about which days we're going to do these hikes. And I mean, I'm with you on all those things, but I want you to invite the divine into the process, to say, surprise me with the serendipitous thing that I would never choose on my own. Try something that's like, I would never, knit or paint a scarf or whatever it is for you. I'd never try this, and then try it. Yeah, you can say something. Yeah.
I'm just going to say that we've been coming here since 77, mm-hmm. and the bus in the front for many, many years after, because we had maybe, till I don't know when they took it down, but it said the bus ride up is free. You remember that?
Yeah.
The bus ride down is costly. So again, it was costly grace and all that. It was just a beautiful way to think about our time here.
Also, for those, I mean, you've been coming since 77, you said, right? For those, we have a couple first-timers, any other first-timers here? Yeah. So, the best thing I can tell you is to just, it's sort of like to note your breathing, note your sense of yourself when you arrive, and then note your sense of yourself when you leave, right? The road, the ride up versus the ride down. You're sitting in the same bus, usually. Think to yourself, how did I feel when I was coming up, versus how do I feel now? What's happened in me? What's shifted? Because then the next step is to try and figure out how to act on it, right? I mean, I think that God often puts these things in front of us and says, "All right, here's this story that you're living that's not necessarily true. What are you gonna do about it?" And that's an open question for us. Yeah. Thank you so much for your patience and your involvement. Thank you for sharing, especially things that are personal. I really appreciate that. And have a great day.